Hello, everyone. This is Rolana Smith, and I'm excited to be here with you today. We're doing Exodus 16, 1 through 30, which is lesson 2 in our Sabbath booklet. This is not a live recording. We're just being extra cautious about a couple of things, so I'm just pre-recording this for everyone at home, at Women's Connection, who wants to hear it, for the small groups who are listening. So this teaching is going to be best if you can arrange yourself in front of the scripture, because we're going to be reading through the whole of the chapter this morning, and so it just would be a good anchoring point to follow along, but I think you can still just listen along if you'd like as well. This is a pretty basic teaching. I'm just going to highlight a couple of things in this lesson because I was ill this week, so I'm just going to pull out a couple of points for you, but I think that might still be helpful for all of us who are just kind of trying to wrap our heads around the Sabbath and Exodus. So today, as we look into this, there's a couple of things about this lesson that are interesting. First, it contains the first mention of Sabbath in the Bible. There is one other mention, which we talked about last week, which is the mention in Genesis, but it's not, the word Sabbath was not used for that. It was more the concept of resting, and it was in reference to God and what he was doing. It had nothing to do with what we should be doing yet. So this is the first time we see the word Sabbath, and it's the first time that we see people, the people of God taking a Sabbath or being asked to take a Sabbath. So that's a new thing that we're encountering today. It's also one of the first instructions that God gives to his people that still is asked of us today in some form. We'll get more into that later. As with anything, the context for this passage is actually really important. So I just want to give us a little bit of the backstory before we dive right into Exodus 16. So last week, again, we covered creation. We covered chapter 1 and just a little bit of chapter 2 of Genesis. So right at the beginning. And Genesis covers the birth of life, the birth of Adam and Eve, but then it continues to, in a sense, show us the birth of a nation, the birth of Israel in some ways. We see awesome people like Abraham and Sarah's story. We see Joseph, we see Noah, we see Jacob. And interwoven into their stories, what we don't see are a lot of rigid rules. We don't see the law. We don't see commandments. What we see are covenants, and we see a lot of individual relationships with God and promises and individual tasks that God gives each of them. If you think of Noah, he asked him to build this ark. It was not a commandment for all people, but specific to his relationship with Noah, God and Noah's relationship. So instead of people who break the law and follow the law, we actually see the tension between people who are righteous and wicked. Those are kind of the terms that get used a lot. And so there are people who are righteous who follow God, but there's not a lot of detail into that. And then there are people who are wicked who do not follow God. But there is some unspoken sense that there is good and bad, and that people either are interested in good or interested in bad. So then after Genesis, we have a gap, a time gap, and then we land in Exodus. At the beginning of Exodus, we see Moses being born, and the Israelites are enslaved in Egypt. They clearly do have some traditions and some culture. When we see that Moses asks Pharaoh for them to be released, he mentions that they need to go sacrifice and feast before the Lord. And whether that was the first time or not, there was some sense or ritual of sacrificing, even if we are not privy to that information yet. All that to say, I think it's helpful to remember that Israel has not been its own nation. They have been in captivity or in enslavement in this nation of Egypt, and they haven't had the freedom to just be themselves. They don't have the law that is well documented yet. And they don't really know all of the things that are right and wrong yet. So even though we have this sense of oral tradition that's probably been passed down in culture to tradition that is rich already, we don't have it mapped out yet or written down yet. The Ten Commandments come later. And so this sense of Sabbath, we don't know if this is the first time they've heard about it as we go into this passage, or if it's something that's been practiced in some ways before. All we know is that this is the first mention of it in scripture where it really is imparted upon them. And then we'll see that again next week. So that's kind of where we start is they come out of captivity after 10 plagues, which is really this really terrible time for Egypt and for them. They cross the Red Sea, they see it parting, they gain freedom from slavery. And does anyone remember what the first thing is that they do after that? Israel gets this really bad rep in the Old Testament for just forgetting and grumbling a lot. And we're going to see that in this passage. However, before any of that, in Exodus 14 and the beginning of 15, it says the following. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw that the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. Then Moses and the people of Israel sang this song to the Lord. So their response was belief and praise. Belief in God, belief that Moses was God's servant, and praise to God. And then they sing this long song together. So after this long song, right before this passage, they set out from the Red Sea into the wilderness, and they couldn't find water for 3 days. So I just want us to take a moment to think. They had food and water, though they had lots of hard work in Egypt. They had a home, though I'm sure it wasn't great. The working conditions were hard, but they had a place. So now they're off into freedom, and everything has changed. They're now with people 24/7. They're walking a lot. And now it's been 3 days and they haven't found water. So they feel like they're going to die. It's like, what did you lead us into, God? They finally find water. And it's bitter. So just imagine hope and disappointment. The ups and downs. And it's not hope of like, maybe I'll get that raise. Or maybe that person gave me the gift I wanted. No, this is life and death hope. So the emotions are high. So they finally find the water and it is bitter. God makes it clean. And then they find a little oasis. So let me just read the verse right before the chapter we're going to talk about. So this is chapter 15, verse 27. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water. So they find this little oasis, this little abundance of water and palm trees and shade, and they just encamped there and it was nice. So that's where we kind of start our story, is this slavery, lots of change, miracle, praise, and then you're just ready to be free, and it's just more wandering in the wilderness and days of being able to dwell on the fact that you can't find it and to worry. And I don't know if you know what anxiety looks like when you think you're going to die, but just the every inch, like, we're not going to find it. I'm going to start to panic for days. And then the hope, the disappointment, an oasis. So we're ending on a good note. And I think that's important to remember as we go into chapter 16. So like I said, it's going to be brief, but I'm just going to read one paragraph at a time and kind of pull out a couple of things, that I think are important, for God's character, our relationship with God. But they also tie into the Sabbath. We'll see it tie into the Sabbath a little bit later in the chapter. So Exodus 16, verses 1 through 3. They set out from Elim. So just to start, they set out from this oasis, this little beautiful spot that provided for them. Okay, just important to remember. They set out from Elim, and the congregation and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. And on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt, and the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we have died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by meat pods and ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out in this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Okay, so of course, on first reading, this just sounds so dramatic. Like, the Lord has brought us out here to die of hunger. Like, we had it better in the land of slavery. But I think that's just really important to remember, that they are looking back at their last few days and how much has changed and what has happened, and they're just not seeing this as a good plan, because they were thirsty for 3 days, they found this oasis, they move on, and now what? They still don't have food, and they're struggling. And I just think that's really, really important to remember. We talked about with the fasting lesson a few months ago that, man, just one meal in our modern day and we can get really cranky really easily. And so, though they are being very dramatic, I have to remind myself that I would probably be leading the charge in such a drama queen way if I was in Israel as well. Just being so easy that we can get pulled to the negative. So let's see how God responds to their grumbling. This is verse 4 through 8. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "At evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumble against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning the bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord." So, just a couple of things. Grumble in the last two paragraphs, 6 times. So there's lots of grumbling. And I think this is really significant, because sometimes as Christians, we can think that we need to have our prayers beautifully set. And we see that humble prayers are wonderful. We just studied ask, seek, and knock. And it's just, there's this sense of, "Lord, I'm so thankful for everything you've provided for me. But also, could I have this one thing?" But here, there was no kind prayer. They did not sing a song of praise before they humbly and kindly asked the Lord for food. No, they didn't even pray at all. They just grumbled, and God answered their grumble. And he answered them not only by providing for them or saying that he would provide for them, but wanting to gift them to see his glory. And yes, there is a test in there as well. And I think the lesson talks about that a little bit more, so I'm not going to go into that. But that's one point, is just the sense that God hears our grumble. And even when we're not praying, he's paying attention and he's trying to provide for us, or he is providing for us. Okay, the next point that I just think is so interesting is that Moses and Aaron have this great tactic. They use this great skill. Like, why are you grumbling to us? Your problem is with God. And I think that's a really helpful strategy, because It is true, right? It is not Moses and Aaron who are like hiding the food and they're like, "What are you doing with the food?" No, their problem really is with God. So they're trying to figure out or they're trying to deflect back to the one who they should be grumbling to. In a sense, they're saying, like, cut out the middleman, don't shoot the messenger, talk to God about your needs, because he's the only one who can provide. What I love about this is I'm the type of person, for me personally, I'm the type of person who takes on everyone's complaints. And I've mentioned this before, something can go wrong in men's ministry and I think it's my fault somehow. So I just really easily take on criticism. And that means that when someone is in pain with God, sometimes I take that on as my own as well. Like, maybe I need to convince them, or maybe I need to say the right thing, or maybe I need to defend God, even though I don't do that. But internally, there's this tension. And what I love about this is the freedom to, again, internally let go of that and say, no, when someone is struggling because they're not sensing God's provision, I can pray for them and I can empathize, but it is not actually my job to fix it or to say the right words to reveal God's plan, because I don't know it either. But rather, I can empathize with how hard it is to see God's provision when we're in the wilderness often. So I don't know if anyone else relates to that, but for me, that was a huge reminder that they actually are grumbling against the Lord, even if Moses and Aaron are the ones taking in the complaints. All right, let's keep reading 9 through 12. Then Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling. And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked towards the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. So, just this beautiful picture of provision. And I love in the Old Testament, in Exodus, we see a call to come near before the Lord. Even in this crazy situation where the main thing is to just get Israel sorted out, having a relationship with his people is a part of God's plan. From walking in the garden with Adam and Eve to the wilderness where they are grumbling, he still wants their relationship wants them to come near. And then he shows them the glory of the Lord. And he's trying to show them and remind him that he is faithful, even if they can't see it through all of this process. Let's read verses 13 to 21. In the evening, quail came up and covered the camp. And in the morning, dew lay around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. When the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each one of you, as much as he can eat. You shall each take an omer, according to the number of the persons that each of you has in his tent. And the people of Israel did so. They gathered some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till morning. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it, eat as much as he could eat. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. So I love this paragraph for a few reasons. One, I love how personal God's provision is. Some gathered more, some less, but it all kind of equaled out. Everyone had enough. There was no lack, just as much as they needed. There's this sense of everyone's built a little bit differently, but I'll take care of you. And I love that. The other thing is, this point is so clear to me. Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till morning. But they did not listen to Moses. And how human is that, right? Like, basic wisdom would state, of course you're going to keep it till morning. Why would you waste food? Waste is not helpful. You were just starving. There is not a bone in my body that would listen to Moses. I think it would be like, I just was hungry. And what's amazing too is like, it sounds like this would be really unappetizing and really unfilling, these like thin pieces of bread, but it was enough. But I would still want to hoard as much as I can for the next day, because I feel like that's not only built into our physical being for survival, but it's common sense and wisdom. And yet, God through Moses asked them not to. And the result was that it stank, and bred worms. So I just want to pull aside and say, oftentimes, we fill in the gaps. We use scripture to dictate our lives, but there's a lot of gaps to fill in. And oftentimes we have this Christian wisdom that we impart on one another, which is really helpful and good. Every mentoring conversation I've ever had has been so helpful. Every time we talk to one another and ask about child rearing or ask about what to do in our jobs or how to handle our neighbor or what to do when someone makes us uncomfortable, that's all godly wisdom that we are passing around. And yet, unless it is direct command from the Lord that we're breaking, godly wisdom is not necessarily what God is asking us to do in each and every situation. And by that I mean, there are times that God is asking us to do something that looks foolish on the outside, even to Christians. I mean, even if you just take the situation and I said, you know, okay, we're going to just take this meal and I'm going to toss it after we're done because God told me so. That would be hard for a lot of us to digest. You'd really have to trust my relationship with the Lord and have to do some explaining for you to feel less uncomfortable with me throwing out a meal. And sometimes that is the case, I think, in Christian society. Wisdom dictates this, but God is moving us in a different direction. And so just this is a reminder for all of us when we feel uncomfortable following what we think God is asking us to do, if it goes against wisdom. But wisdom, if it is not submitted to our faith and our relationship to the Lord, still ends up stinking and breeding worms. So we can be fooled into thinking that we need to follow wisdom when we need to be always following the Lord. So for me, I will say, when I've made decisions that I feel like are risky, I have brought around mentors to pray with me and to seek out their hearing of the Lord as well in a situation. So it doesn't mean you just listen to everything that you think God might be doing. If it does feel uncomfortable, you can get other people to be praying with you. So that's one of my favorite side notes of this paragraph, is they each gathered as much as they could. They weren't supposed to keep more till morning. They did. The consequence was stinky. And was kind of known to everyone. Can you just imagine waking up and you're like, oh, that person didn't listen? Or I wonder if it was just all of them, right? They just all have these little stinky, wormy pots everywhere. Okay, let's read verses 22 through 26. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay aside to be kept till the morning." So they laid it aside till the morning, as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. Moses said, "Eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none." So here is this awesome example of what we talked about a few weeks ago of, for the Sabbath you prepare. Bake what you bake, boil what you boil, so that you can have a solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So he's creating this sacred space that we talked about. And he's asking people to be prepared so that they don't work and they don't gather and they don't bake and they don't boil. They're just ready to rest and in earnest. to keep that day holy, to remember the Lord. The other thing is, like we said, faith leads to provision, where just doing what you think is right in the sight of your own eyes or even common sense leads to stinking. So here, the pattern that they have seen is if they keep the food to the next day, it's going to stink. Here, they're going to have to trust God's word, and they're going to say, okay, I've seen my futile effort of gathering too much. It hasn't led to anything. Now you're asking me to gather double. Isn't it going to rot? So I have to trust your word. And God provides, right? We see that it did not rot. It did not stink. There were no worms. He provided, and he provided a miracle. And I think we have to remember that we are a God who deals in miracles and in not in logic. And even precedent and experience and looking at the facts can lead us to the wrong conclusion, because he is a God of faith, and he does things differently than we would expect. So here he says, eat it today, for today is Sabbath to the Lord, and you will not find any in the field. So let's see how they respond to that. Just let's go one more verse. On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. So, of course, they didn't listen, because we like to really secure our own security instead of relying on the word of the Lord. The word of the Lord is risky. They have literally, physically been disappointed that they have not found water and food before, just a few weeks ago. So they are not gathering out of just pride or scoffing, but out of their physical experience that they just experienced. This is a hard ask to say, I will provide the food, trust me, don't go and gather, but really take this time to believe. So they did not do that, and let's continue and see what happens. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So it took them kind of this experience of trying it and their efforts being futile and them being held accountable to say, okay, we're going to rest. God provides in the rest. He provided the food, but we have a hard time believing that he'll provide for us when we're in the wilderness, and we have plenty of evidence to show that we are not being provided for in the way that we feel comfortable. So this is a really hard ask. For us, when we talk about rest, it is so different from what God is asking the Israelites to do now. He is asking them to rest despite that their lives are on the line in some ways. And I think that's a really helpful reminder that faith is more important than survival in some ways, because he will provide in that lack. The other way I keep thinking about, like, again, that this is one of the first things he's really asking the community to be faithful on, is this Sabbath rest, this keeping the day holy. He's trying to get that foundation right from the get-go. He's not letting them settle into their new home and then establishing a Sabbath. No, in the middle of the wilderness, in the middle of the crazy, in the middle of the hunger, we need to rest. And going back to Genesis, we need to call good, good. We need to call God good. So what I call this is surrendered rest. They realized their work was futile, so they had forced rest, surrendered rest. So the 2 points I just want to leave you with as we close. Is your rest working, or do you need surrendered rest? So often we're trying to grab little pieces of rest, and that's good. But is it working, or do we need to really work and prepare and carve out a solemn rest, a holy day for the Lord, or a holy Sabbath for the Lord? Do we need to carve that out and have surrendered rest, where we say our current rest strategy is not working, and so I need to go to the Lord and say, even in the craziness of this world, I will find some way to rest in the Lord, and take that seriously. So, of course, I feel like rest in the Lord, the way we envision it, has this like glow to it. And you just feel like so at peace with the Lord and one with him. And it's like beautiful and happy. And you like post these cute little Instagram verses because you just feel so refreshed. That's not what the Israelites had, right? They had surrendered rest. And I think that's a really good place to start, because I think like with a lot of things, the payoff comes later, and not always immediate. So I think it starts with surrendered rest and can lead to more and more of feeling actually at peace with the Lord, or more and more grumbling with the Lord instead of at other people. So I think those are good places. Second, point is just a reminder that we've seen in this passage and talked about before, that this is really putting into practice our faith. And so for me, the question is, what am I afraid to lose by carving out this time? What am I afraid to encounter in myself and in my relationship with the Lord by carving out this time? And I'd keep going, if I can't get it done in 6 days, should I really be doing it in 7? And for me, the time crunch of trying to carve out time means I have to start learning and discerning with the Lord. What do I need to do differently? What do I need to cut out? What do I need to pray about? So that I can actually rest, because my current rest isn't working. I need my surrendered rest to start with. Are you worried about losing anything or encountering anything if you prepare and carve out time before the Lord? So those are the two things that I'll leave you with today. And I hope this was helpful, and I'll see you next week. Bye.